through the street hierarchy. They have to look to freeways and then the very, very major streets called major city traffic streets, and then the traffic access streets, of which there are a few around the central city, district collectors, which is like Lombard neighborhood collectors, and then finally the residential streets, which is local service streets. And in addition, if the pole is going to be replaced with a taller one in a residential area on a residential street, they do have to provide the notice and conduct a meeting with the neighborhood. And I understand the amendment is to include the business association. And that also addresses that notice issue. Staff will be attending these meetings. So there are staff eyes several places along here to make sure that the certification is real. And this would be like the first one, because the staff would attend these meetings and we would see what's going on. We would know if there's, say, a major arterial next nearby, we'd say, why don't you use poles on that street instead, et cetera. The neighbors could also contact city staff. And on the notice, we're going to mandate that a city person's name and number and email will be on there. So the city contact will be easy. There will also require a contact for the power company and the cell phone company.
On this yellow sheet, on the back, 9A and 9B have some lines crossed out in regards to seeking approval of the abutting property owners. What was the reason for taking that?
We still will, because there's a financial aspect to this. At the last minute, we were having trouble figuring out the street tree requirement, and we were originally going to have the carrier have to go through and negotiate with the property owner and so forth. And the industry said, and Parks agreed, that, look, if they just pay the fee, we, meaning Parks, would then work with the owner for that. So this isn't a final, but it's nearly final. And that's essentially the change. So,
Dave, I think there's still there were a couple other points, though, that are different from the current policy. We have reduced the number of feet that you're allowed to increase a pole in the right-of-way from 20 feet down to 15 feet.
Right. And the incentive, again, not to use the residential areas, is we have allowed taller poles at greater replacement heights in the non-residential areas, primarily commercial, employment, and industrial.
So my assumption is that you could put the wires in a metal pole, less visible, obviously, than if you put a cap, a cylinder antenna on top of a wooden pole. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure I understand. I'm sorry.
Metal pole, hollow. You could put wires up the middle of it.
Correct. And in the ones that you've seen, there is some. PGE does require separation of the power from the coaxial cable that goes to the wireless facility.
So the in your
one or the other will go up the middle. Yes,
Commissioner Adams, if I understand your question, on a wooden pole, in order to supply the power to the antenna and to get the signal down from the antenna, they have to put a conduit on the outside of the pole to run the wires up and down. On a metal pole, they do it on the interior of it.
So just again, a little bit to follow up on Commissioner Leonard's and Commissioner Fish's earlier questions. Could we require that what these replacement poles or what have you, just the end product be a metal pole with the wire up the middle and there's it's the less obtrusive sort of top cap antenna? Is that something we could just say that's the standard for the city of Portland in terms of the look, the placement we'll talk about?
Well, let me distinguish the pole from the cap. Our regulations already require a cap unless they can demonstrate that one is not feasible. So the cap is already in the current proposed amendments. Okay. The current proposed amendments do not regulate the material. I suppose we could, but I would like, if we're going to do that, it might be best to pull both PGE, PP&L, and the wireless carriers back in, because again, it starts to move into the area where there are national electrical safety code issues.
Around metal versus wood. And is it the technology that's improved to the point where we haven't sought this level of improved sort of compatibility because the technology is, the caps have gotten smaller or something, or is there some advance in technology that prevented us from doing this earlier?
Yeah, the wireless carriers don't build their own antennas. They're all from third-party vendors. And the technology is always advancing and always getting better. However, we were informed that though they can do this and they're willing to, and actually the carriers had started doing the caps before today even. There have been other placements since. They're not as good a coverage, but they're still adequate. And so that's a balance that we're making.
The other part of that is that in all other utility pole installations by the utilities, we don't review the nature of the structure that is being proposed by the utility. The permit application comes in, and we don't do a check to make sure that the calculations by the utility are appropriate for the location. We just accept their calculations as submitted.
Can I follow up on that for a sec? Because we use a very clear standard. You're proposing a standard of whether it's feasible or
Correct. Infeasible.
So what exactly does that mean? What's the criteria by which we evaluate whether something's feasible or not? Is it a cost factor? Is it a timing factor? Is it a coverage factor? Is it a safety factor?
If you look on the yellow sheet, we describe feasibility or this best efforts as capable of being done, taking into consideration existing technology, logistics, and cost in light of the overall project purpose. That's taken directly from a cell tower denial from a hearings officer that the city council affirmed.
So
there's some subjectivity to it.
So David, if we had the legal right, which I know we don't, but if we had the legal right to restrict all future cell phone equipment to major arterials with a particular focus on co-location, if we had the legal right to do that, would the wireless companies be able to achieve the coverage that they seek in our city? In other words, is the technology such that as long as you're on major arterials, you can cover most of residential Portland?
I can't answer that definitively, but I can tell you that generally the search ring nowadays for a new antenna has a radius of about 650 feet, which isn't much. And when you consider, or when we considered, that over 50% of Portland is zoned residential, and within that, 80% of the streets are all local service streets, it didn't seem to us that we could make that requirement.
Certainly, having our understanding of the technology is relevant to how we evaluate whether it's feasible or not.
Correct.
And the reason I say that is that I'm just guessing, although maybe you know, but I'm guessing that the Arbor Lodge pole that appeared at that site because it was the path of least resistance. They were able to do it by just replacing an existing pole, putting some equipment in, and it was in an area where they didn't expect to get much pushback. That there was no systematic evaluation of alternatives within four blocks, including arterials that are within four blocks, that this just was a convenience and it was done and without much consideration of the impact. Am I far off on that?
Well, you know, we were not privy to their poll selection process, but we did talk to PGE and the carriers together. And because there are some larger streets very close by, and a block away there is a run of those transmission poles that I was talking about. They're already 65 feet tall. They have the lots of large wires and the separation of the high voltage power lines. At the time when they planned that site, which was 2 or 3 years ago, PGE was not allowing anybody on those poles. And the poles that were on Rosa Parks Way and on Greeley were too far away, which goes back to the point about those fairly small search rings. 650-foot radius is not very big. So that didn't leave them a lot of choice. And in addition, they looked actually at the park across the street. But under that 2005 land use decision, a new cell tower, even if it's low or short, can only be built if it's if the carrier can demonstrate that the use of one or more antenna on one or more other locations is infeasible. So that's, they couldn't meet the standard to put even a low pole in the park across the street.
So The proposed changes that you've brought before us today clearly enhance, in my opinion, are clearly better than existing law. So let me ask counsel a legal question. We are party to a coalition in Washington now trying to push back against a proposed FCC rule, which would effectively preempt all the states and local jurisdictions from having much of a say on the location of cell phone towers by creating a uniform national standard of something like 75 days or whatever is agreed upon by the commission, under which you would have to review any application. And if you didn't do it within that very abbreviated time frame, it would be deemed approved. And that's one way that the Federal Communications Commission is attempting to strip the states of any authority here. If we enter into a contractual agreement with the wireless companies that set forth these rules, does our contractual agreement survive whatever changes are adopted under federal law through any regulatory body?
The proceeding that you're referring to is a petition by the cellular telephone
industry association, CTIA.
CTIA. And they have petitioned to preempt zoning regulations and require that decisions be made within a specified time frame. And the petition identified a 75-day time period for review, which is inconsistent with Oregon law. And we pointed that out in the filings that we made with the FCC. That matter is under consideration, and we're awaiting a determination from them. It would not affect these particular contracts because these contracts are for use of the right-of-way. But that's not to say that there couldn't be a subsequent petition from the cell phone industry in seeking to, say, preempt local regulation of the right-of-way. Because there have been, this is now the third proceeding before the FCC to preempt various local regulations.
So that's a very important point, which you just said. So it doesn't preclude the wireless companies from seeking to have the Federal Communications Commission preempt our authority to enter into an agreement, which we're now proposing they enter into by contract. So
Right. Just
so we're clear, it means that if this council gives the green light to these changes and they're entered into these contracts,
right. It
does not preclude the wireless companies from going to Washington and getting a preemption which nullifies these provisions.
There's that legal risk, and we can't resolve that whether we approve this today or don't approve it today. That legal risk remains out there.
Well, actually, I think we can resolve that. We can do by contract with a contracting willing party anything we want, as long as it's not illegal. So why can't we, if we're in negotiating good faith with wireless companies, why should there be any risk that any of the contracting parties we're dealing with are going to seek to enter into a contract which they then gut by getting a federal preemption on something they've agreed to by contract?
If what you're asking is that we ask them to waive the federal statutes, I would have to think about that, but I'm not sure that that's something we could accomplish, but I'd have to give it that some thought.
I guess the point I'm driving at is, are they, if the wireless companies are agreeing to these conditions and we're advertising to the neighborhoods that these are the new ground rules, wouldn't it not be disingenuous to simultaneously have these contracting parties go to Washington and seek to have the federal government invalidate the very agreement that they've agreed to with us?
Well, I can answer that on two levels. One is, I'm not sure what form that kind of a requirement would take in the sense of asking them to waive the ability to petition the federal government for redress. And then secondly, there's some hope at government relations and in my office that with a change in administration and a change in membership of the FCC, that those kinds of petitions will not be welcomed with open arms as they have been over the last several years.
If I may add to the CTIA's membership is probably somewhere in the nature of 80 to 120 different companies. So if we get some sort of a waiver from these five, the federal preclusion, if it's going to happen, is going to proceed, or state, because the industry is much more than these five companies that we're talking about today.
But these these partners, these people we're contracting with, could represent to us that at least during the term of a 3-year contract, they will abide by these rules and will not seek to invalidate them through other means. I assume this is a friendly negotiation. We're not putting a gun to someone's head saying you have to agree to these rules. They're agreeing to sign a contract that contains these rules. And we've not been apprised by anyone that these are that they believe these are illegal.
It's quite the opposite. We worked very, very closely with industry to develop what you have before you today.
I'm framing a concern about just how binding these are. But I have one other concern, if I could just raise it. What's the with respect to the new public notice requirements, what's the notification radius in your proposal?
200 feet.
And why was there any consideration given to having a 400-foot radius?
Yes, there was. We actually developed this in conjunction with BDS staff and kind of followed some land use statutes. 400 feet is what's required in a Type 3 land use review, which is a huge, usually the most major impact type of land use review. A brand-new cell tower, an institutional master plan, things like that, or Type 3 land use cases that only require notice at that level. Since we're talking about putting antennas on existing or slightly taller replacement utility poles, it didn't feel, in our opinion or in BDS's opinion, that the notice radius could go to 400 feet. We looked at the radius that they use in the land use code and came up with 200 feet, which is more than a Type 1 review, and I think it's the same as a Type 2 review.
So I have a few questions. On the technical side, where do we, the city, get our technical knowledge from on these issues related to cell phone towers?
The 911 folks operate the city's public safety radio system. And I spoke with that staff about some of the things that we had as staff and that you had when we've spoken with you before, which is, can we regulate the RF? Can we second guess where an antenna goes? Can we really, you know, get into things like propagation studies and search rings and so forth? And they have some of that expertise, but advised us not to.
Not to what?
Not to create a second tier of second review of structural calculations or RF radio frequency calculations.
I think another part of the answer to that is that we're part of a national association of local officials responsible for communications policies, cities all over the country. We have a network where we share information about what's going on. There are many communications engineers that are part of this network of NATOA, and we rely on that in a lot of our work in terms of sharing information, bouncing questions about, well, the wireless is proposing this, and getting feedback. And so it's a very cost-effective way for us to share what's going on here and understand what's going on in other cities throughout the country.
So sort of following up on, I think, Commissioner Fish's earlier question, I mean, do we know what would be required on the ground to ensure that the city gets the cell phone and wireless access that it needs?
By the city, you mean the city of Portland, or you mean our overall residents and citizens?
Residents. It's a technical question. And we studied, you know, based on, A, do we know what the industry needs? Do we know what the cost benefit to the industry of various approaches? Are they using equipment that is the more, you know, robust, that can work in different situations? I'm just curious about where our technical for our city, who's doing sort of the technical review?
The city doesn't perform a technical review at that level, but when the carriers buy the rights to the spectrum licenses from the federal government, there are coverage capacity requirements in there about serving X amount of the population within so many years and so forth.
And do you review those?
We don't.
And why don't we?
We don't have the expertise.
And we don't have the expert, and we don't seek to get the expertise because?
Primarily, up until now, we've been relying, these antenna and the placement of antenna are market driven. And the facilities are expensive to build and expensive to maintain and expensive to operate. And we've deferred to the marketplace in terms of making those decisions about when an installation will occur and so where an installation will occur.
I feel a little bit outgunned by the marketplace here. Clearly, we want the best service for Portland residents at the lowest cost we can help facilitate at the least with the least amount of intrusion into our quality of life, both visually and people are concerned, and there might be realities. My former boss had very big concerns about these towers, as you know. So I feel like if we don't have sort of the technical capacity to at least keep an eye on what's happening, how do we know that we're getting an appropriate sort of deal from the other side?
Well, there's a compensation component to this as well, if that's kind of where you're getting at. Or you're just going out of a pure on a service level.
I think what he's getting at is how do we trust, how do we take their word this is where the tower needs to go?
And is that where you're going with this?
Well, it's a combination of location and equipment. Are they investing in the appropriate kind of equipment that provides good service, that is the least intrusive? I mean, it is a couple of different things that I think fall into the category of trying to facilitate a good city. That I just don't know how we're having that conversation with them when they have all the technical expertise and we don't have much that is pertinent to our city. I understand we have generalized sort of information of cities across the United States, but what about as it relates to our city? I just don't understand.
Well, I need to fall back on Ben's comment that this is market driven up to this point, and if we're going to go to that level, it might be a larger city discussion rather than just the antenna that are going in the right of way, which are only maybe 5 or 10% of the antenna that are in the city.
But fair enough. And I think I'm done with the line of questioning other than to say I just don't know how we, the collective we in city government, that even if we can't regulate it, at least we can facilitate an understanding of whether a cell phone company is acting in the most responsible way. Responsible to its shareholders, no doubt, but also responsible to the neighborhoods in which it serves. It just doesn't seem like we've got enough technical information to know whether one particular pole is needed or could we facilitate using the bully pulpit or anything else, co-location of services on the same pole and fewer poles. I'm not getting that. I feel outgunned.
We've already done that on co-location.
Well, we have, but in every hearing I've been at since I've been on the council, I've, as staff will recall, have asked the very question, which is one of the, and you guys do fabulous work, I know that from personal experience, but when I read the current standards which say apply best efforts to place them on existing buildings, and I recall in our hearings asking the cell phone company to explain to me what effort they made to co-locate at a specific facility, and I would actually identify where I happen to know another facility existed. The truth of the matter is what we ended up hearing time after time was that they would have to lease space off that other facility from the competing cell phone company, and they really found it just untenable to do that. And so we're proposing a standalone facility. So notwithstanding our best efforts, I mean, I have to say I very much agree with Commissioner Adams' sentiments that, you know, I feel sometime that notwithstanding us doing everything we can possibly do, that we're allowing some of these poles to be placed in areas that I think we actually do have the legal right to say no to if we knew more about the technology involved. And I'm not sure I agree with Commissioner Fish that we can't regulate them out of residential neighborhoods just as we don't allow certain industrial kinds of behaviors in residential neighborhoods as well. I mean, I think we have to do what we do based on our best intention of helping coverage. But I too am feeling a little bit frustrated, some of which is not so much this stuff you guys have worked on, which I think is a dramatic improvement over what we have, but some of the history that I'm just personally aware of similar kinds of languages, of language that's been used heretofore with respect to co-location that doesn't seem to really work the way we intended that language to work.
Well, we did actually, as part of this process, investigate and come up with some estimates for communications engineering expertise. But we ended up not proposing that, instead relying upon the company certifying it and the citizen involvement and staff involvement and then our networking.
So you've actually anticipated that as an issue, and
yes, we did, mm-hmm. and we came up with some figures for communications engineering expertise. We even consulted within ComNet and the 911 safety folks, but there really wasn't the kind of specific expertise to mm-hmm. what we were talking about here. So we did investigate that, but did not move forward with it because of budget limitations.
I appreciate that.
It seems to me that because this problem probably is unique to Portland and that you belong to a national organization, that there must be a body of information or recommendations in terms of models that could be used either from the technology side or the public policy side on how they're placed. I assume that you folks have consulted with these and that, but I'm kind of going to the question that, that Commissioner Adams and Mr. Leonard are raising in terms of technology side. I agree with Commissioner Adams is that I feel like that we're sort of outgunned on this issue. Is there a way to use those national organizations to determine either the technology issues or public policy issues so that we could make a more informed decision as a council?
Yeah, we can do that, and we can follow up with that, absolutely.
And some of it, though, we have done already, as Mary Beth indicated, on both sides, both the technical side as the other and the policy side.
So are the public policy issues the same ones we're facing here?
Yes.
And is there a model out there that people seem to say, oh, it's the Galveston model that really works well or some other model?
You know, primarily not. In my investigation of that question, I found that most jurisdictions, their zoning codes do seem to apply to the right-of-way, and that's not true in Portland. So most of those other codes were essentially zoning codes.
Which is likely to be preempted anyway. I want to go back to something Commissioner Leonard said, though, because I think it's very important. And I want to be very clear. My preference would be to have an absolute bar to cell phone towers in residential areas. You had a slide earlier where you showed federal law that applied here, and you raised, and when I asked you specifically about the technology, you said that there was a certain radius you needed in order to get coverage. And then you linked it with a slide that talked about lifelines, you know, the implication being that if you have a cell phone tower, maybe if you have a cell phone, you want to call 911, it has to be able to function, so we don't want dead zones within residential areas. So I get all that. My preference would be to have an absolute blanket prohibition of putting these towers in residential areas. The question that is sort of, you know, the premise, though, of everything we're doing here is that for some reason the technology is not there. And these things have to be spread out in such a way that they include placement within residential areas to have coverage. So that explains why I asked the two questions, one about technology. Do we know for sure that that's actually true? The question I specifically framed was, can we restrict them to arterials, and will that give us the coverage we need? And you said no. You said something about 600 feet. And the second question is, which I'm conveniently forgetting. But the point is, it goes to the issue of the technology. Without a better understanding of the technology, I agree with my colleagues. I'm not sure how we make a feasibility assessment. A feasibility assessment. I mean, so they put in writing that it's not feasible, and there's technological cost and other considerations. We have no baseline to evaluate that. We can say do it under penalty of perjury, so they sign it and certify it. But how do we, unless we have the same sophisticated professionals looking at it that they have, I think we are outgunned. But anyway, I want to clarify my position. If there was a way to restrict them completely from residential areas, I would support that.
And to be clear, what I was speaking to, and I've had this discussion with Ben and David as recently as yesterday, I'm not saying that I think we could defend unilaterally saying you can't have cell phones transmissions in a particular place without some justification. And I think the issue becomes here you know, do we have justification? And the answer I'm hearing is we really don't have the expertise to decide that or not. Is there some other method by which we could provide coverage other than what the cell phone industry tells us? And the concern I've had right along is that we haven't staffed up to the point or have not developed the tools to the point to challenge some of what they tell us has to be. I'm just not buying what they tell us has to be really is, and whether or not it might be true that we could restrict the placement of these facilities in commercial arterials.
So do we know where, I'm just curious, do we know the systems? I mean, do you know where the cell phone towers are in the city, and have the companies showed you the range that, given topography and the strength of a particular cell phone tower, what they're covering within the city?
Yes.
Okay.
Planning keeps the map of all of the antenna placements that go through building permit or land use cases.
And you've got that all compiled in a map somewhere?
Planning does.
And you all study that as part of your management of the franchisees?
Well, what we have done on these, since even before these amendments, is when they make an application, your street systems management folks let us know, and we go take a look at it immediately. And if it's one, well, we can ask them, you know, this is 50 feet from a major street, can you move it? Or this isn't painted, it's got to be painted before we're going to sign off. So we've built in some of that.
Great. Do you know, though, if if the goal is best possible service at the best possible price for our citizens, least intrusive, do you then also look at where the nearest towers are of a competitor or other options for putting the equipment up?
Yes, but it's not a rigorous inquiry for the reason that Ben noted.
Noting that we just can't tell them to do something else, so there's
We don't have the expert. If they tell us something, we have to take it at face value is where we are. And if we find out later something isn't done as the way it should be done, then there are franchise remedies sections in these contracts.
Now, in addition to the technology, and perhaps as part of that technology examination, has there been research done in terms of the effects on humans, in terms of the
health effects?
The health effects on human beings in terms of the emission of the electrical. I know that up in the West Hills that there was some concern, and I don't know where it's at, about the radio towers up there and people living nearby. Are there similar effects with cell phone, or is the...
That's the area I will help the staff out here a little bit, that I learned is one of those areas that we're not allowed to use as a consideration in the placement because of preemption of federal laws, the health effects. So I'm very careful in my own analysis.
The federal law prevents us from looking at that?
And which is why Vera never sat in on a cell phone hearing, because she had taken a strong position that she thought that contributed to some of her health issues, so she precluded herself. But I want to note for the record that that is not an issue I've raised here or any other forum, that mine are very focused on the zoning issues and the technological issues.
So, but I'd like to follow up on the mayor's question, because at this hearing, which is not a review of an application, we're not similarly constrained. So based on, I was going to ask, following up on the mayor's point, to either Mary Beth or David, do we as a city believe that there are adverse health impacts of as a result of the placement of cell phone towers in close proximity to human beings?
There are studies that indicate there are. There are studies that say there are not. And so I think that's a very difficult question to answer. There's scientific studies on both sides of that issue.
Okay. I would note that we're still arguing in New York City, they're still arguing about whether 9/11 caused health, had a deleterious health impact on people who lived in residential areas that were within a half mile of the impact. But that said, Commissioner Leonard is right. This question in the wisdom of the Senate has been preempted. So we can't consider that as part of our review of any cell phone tower. But it does not preclude us from adding to our legislative agenda, for example, a request that the health impacts be reviewed at the federal level. It doesn't preclude us from seeking to have the preemption lifted. Nor, in my judgment, does it prevent this council at some point, if it chose, to have a hearing on the health impacts of cell phone towers, as long as it doesn't become part of our review process.
It doesn't. I just, having been schooled on this topic early on, have been very careful not to ever place the city in a position in any of the advocacy positions I've taken to overturn applications, and I don't think I've been unsuccessful in one of my positions yet to never mention the health effects, because you don't have to. You don't actually have to make the case that they're not being placed in consistent with city policy. For instance, co-location. I remember the debate we had on Milwaukee and Holgate centered around whether or not they'd actually pursued co-location well enough. So I would just caution us not to get too much off track and then create some grounds by which all of our good work could be overturned.
So I do raise this, though, Randy, in part to throw David Solos a little lifeline, because the last time I was with him at a neighborhood meeting, there were a number of people who got up and said that they had been literally physically ill because of the tower and the equipment. And David very correctly said, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, but you should know that as a matter of federal law, we have no jurisdiction to inquire into that. You know, go see a doctor, get well. And I just want, I mean, so as for anyone watching this program, it's not that we are indifferent to the potential health impacts, but we have been told that that is not within our jurisdiction.
And I would just argue that to get to the place where we're making a policy decision as to where they placed them, there are plenty of other good reasons not to allow that without even having to get into the health issue.
In an indirect addressing both of these issues, the technology issue and these other issues, is as Mary Beth pointed out, this extension is only for 3 years. It's not the typical 10-year franchise that we grant for the very reasons that you guys raised.
How much money do we get off the franchise for cell phones?
We get about $3,300 per year per pole that they actually use, and right now they have 52 poles, so it's $160,000. It's not really a revenue generator.
What do we use that money on?
It goes into the general fund.
So do we have people signed up, or are there other questions?
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
Do we have folks signed up to testify on this matter?
We have three people signed up.
Please call them.
George Polos, Kathy Furstenow, and Rick Seifert.
If we wanted to, we could put this over.
Thank you, folks, for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
When does it show up here?
Anyone can begin.
My name is George Polos, and I've lived in Portland most of my life, 33 years, at my current residence at 104 Southeast 50th, just a little bit south of Burnside, and I'm chairman of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association Cell Tower Committee. And we have some real concerns about Clearwire and placing their cell tower equipment and transformers on PGE power poles within residential neighborhoods. This has created some problems you should be aware of. First, the transformer is very large and placed about 15 feet above the ground on the pole by the street. It is amazingly ugly, unsightly monstrosity. It is plainly visible by all who pass by or look out their windows. This is located about 25 feet from my house at the end of my driveway. A PGE meter is located on the same pole at eye level. Secondly, and really the worst of everything, is the transformer is very noisy. It emits a constant, loud, irritating, vibrating, and humming sound that can be heard outside, inside all parts of my house and some of my neighbors. It is especially noticeable during the quiet of the evening and night or when windows are left open. This definitely detracts from the livability environment within the city of Portland. I do have certain city bureaus looking into this noise aspect already, and hopefully something will be done to modify this noise level, but I don't have too much hope on this. We do not want other residential neighborhoods to have to face the same identical problems as we are currently facing now. I've contacted numerous people regarding this, including Paul Van Orden, Portland's noise control officer. Paul completed a noise reading on the transformer on Friday, November 21st, and discovered it was several decibels too high. But I'm afraid that even with possible adjustments, there still will be remaining humming or vibrating sounds that continually starts and stops, and it starts and stops 24/7 all the time. I'm sure most of you wouldn't enjoy listening to this irritating noise, and prior to this, your neighborhood was quiet and very peaceful. I understand the council will be approving item number 1677 on the agenda, amending ordinance 181246 by replacing Section 6D with Exhibit A, if that, hopefully I have it right. If these rules had been in a place when Clearwire completed their transformer work over a month ago by my house, they'd be in violation of the structure and street locations. Single-family dwelling zones and local service streets are last on the priority list in the placement of the above apparatus. The first structural selections are industrial, employment, and commercial zones out of the various six categories. Single-family dwelling zones are last, which I'm in. Regional trafficways and major city traffic streets are to be used before the last of six selections of streets are local service traffic streets. I feel Clearwire did not exercise good judgment by eliminating the first five categories in both structural and street selections, and conversely placing their transformer in our residential area immediately. I cannot believe that a suitable pole cannot be found on Burnside or Stark Streets, the two streets I live between, for their needs. I hope city bureaus will monitor this company's placement of future cell equipment closely and that others don't have to live with the problems that we currently face. My wish would be the removal of the transformer to another location. This would be possible if newly adopted rules were retroactive. But since three-year contracts have already been signed, as I understand it, and Clearwater managed to install this equipment before your passage of the new amendments without talking to any of us, which I find rather amazing, I suppose my neighbors and I are going to be stuck with this unwanted, unsightly, noisy intrusion in our once nice, quiet neighborhood.
I would just point out that the three-year contracts are what is before us today. So in essence, you're saying had this policy we're considering adopting been in place, you might have a better shot at getting this into a major arterial.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
And that's the picture of it?
Yes, that's right outside our driveway, right on the little grassy strip between the sidewalk and the street. And it doesn't show all the antenna stuff that goes all on top. It just looks, to me, it looks like a cell tower. But it's the noise level that is so irritating all the time. And we're several houses down, people are hearing this thing. It's when it's quiet.
Are
it's,
you sure?
It's three noises. You have the humming noise, and then there's an irritating other noise inside that that's piercing to my ears, and then you have this vibrating sound at times. And it's very pronounced west and south and east. You don't hear it so much on north, but it comes at us.
So again, to me, this would be an example of whether or not that's the cheapest, noisiest equipment, or is that maybe more expensive but quieter equipment. I just want to see total cost, total benefit from everyone's point of view.
So I contacted the people in Seattle, one of the people up there, Kevin Mackey, about it, and when they first put it in, it was really loud, a lot louder than what we're experiencing right now. And he said we could put some sound muffler things on it, which they finally did two or three weeks later. That eliminated a little bit of it. Then another guy came out later that same week. That was done on Monday or Tuesday. On Thursday night, someone else came out from Clearwire, did some adjustments, and we're right back up to a very loud process again. Plus, we have now that noise within a noise and the vibration going on at times. And I don't know where to go. I've contacted a lot of people, and we're trying to get this noise level down because it's really not comfortable to hear this in your house, all parts of your house. And the neighbors are complaining also about it, of course. I don't think that has been brought up so much as you mentioned one time about the noise level, but you know, nobody realized the noise level. When I presented this to the Mount Tabor Association, nobody realized we're talking about a monstrosity like this right in front of your house, and especially the noise level being involved when they filled out some of those surveys and so forth. Nobody realized that this is what we're getting. And they did it without any contact with any of the neighbors. None of us were notified. They just did it. Blocked off our street 3 days, doing all this stuff.
Sir, do you happen to know why this particular piece of equipment wasn't buried in a vault as opposed to being attached to the pole?
No, I do not.
It's cheaper. I suspect it's cheaper.
Please proceed.
Hello. Kathy Firstnow, 4930 Northeast 73rd, Portland, Oregon. The testimony I handed out to you is a long version. I'm trying to do the short version, so here we go. I feel that the proposed amendments today need some work. Stating that a carrier will use the smallest equipment available is too vague. Despite the fact that each carrier has different size equipment, some of them are quite large, there should be definite dimensions defined. Otherwise, how do we know that the criteria is being met? Current height limits for replacement poles in zones other than open space and park is 20 feet for the current height to structures no taller than 80 feet. The amendment would increase the height in most classifications and allow unlimited height in industrial zones. Parks, schools, and housing can be adjacent to industrial zones, so do we really want the skyline to be inundated with towering cell phone equipment? There are no considerations avoiding saturation of an area in these amendments. Cell phone equipments only need to be separated by 650 feet to avoid interfering with each other. So on West Burnside, there's like 20 poles right now, and of course there's no other streets like that have 20 cell phone equipment on them, but there are no restrictions currently in these amendments restricting them to like a half a mile radius of how many per pole. So I think there needs to be some restrictions. Oftentimes the facility cabinets will be put on private property because it's more expensive to bury them in the street, and so you need to get a permission from the property owner, and in doing this, that becomes a land use case because you're paying someone to have facilities on the property, so that really makes it having a business in a residential zone, so that's really not in the character of a neighborhood. When cell phone carriers replace an old pole with a new pole, they do contact within the 200 feet, according to this, and they contact the neighborhood associations. But what is the purpose of that exactly, other than to say, this is what we're putting in? You can choose the color, but we can't really say, no, we don't want this. I don't know what the point of that is. They say that 85% of the Portland residents own cell phones. I think that's inflated because many people own two or three cell phones for work, for personal use. So when you account that into that, I think the number would drop significantly. I know myself, 9 adults in my family, only 2 of us have cell phones. And so I don't feel that it is our burden to accommodate the cell phone companies. Carrier needs more poles because they need the capacity to handle the broadband, streaming video. If they were to just use phones as phones people were, then the current equipment would be sufficient. So I'm asking that you do not approve the amendments until changes are made, that the pole width and antenna dimensions be defined, and that there not be unlimited height to the poles, saturation limits be addressed, wording is included to allow individuals and neighborhood associations to deny a pole, or just don't deny it or have poles in residential areas at all. The city...
Okay. Please continue.
Oh, thank you. So the city cannot be a barrier to the market entry or prohibit telecommunications service. The city can choose not to allow utility poles in residential areas if it's not based on health reasons. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that you could make at least the tighter restrictions, because it is your choice. If you pass these amendments today as proposed, neighbors really don't have much of a choice. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Rick Seifert. I'm here from Hillsdale. I'm the head of the Hillsdale Alliance. Don Bach can't be here today. He is the president of the Neighborhood Association. And Mike Roach can't be here today. He is the president of the Hillsdale Business and Professional Association, but they support what I have to say today. I prepared a testimony, which I'm really have put aside. I'm not going to read from it simply because I think there's been some responsiveness to my concern. I still have concerns, but the addition of business and professional associate business associations as someone these companies have to contact is certainly welcomed. And I thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for your prompt response. That said, I want to give you the perspective from the Hillsdale Town Center, and it may be a perspective from town centers in general. I think, I don't know if we can show the first picture here that I have on the screen in front of me. Is that up there? Yes. This is Hillsdale. This is Capitol Highway, and you all know it well. And you can see that if this town center, which is to be a place that is attractive for pedestrians and is to have a pleasant streetscape and which has 7 bus lines that runs through it, if it is going to be what it really ought to be, those poles have to go away, and they have to be undergrounded. And in fact, we in our neighborhood had a vote in which the majority of people wanted to establish an undergrounding district. It wasn't a mandate, but it was like 54%. And this was some time ago, and the council instead decided to set up an undergrounding study group, which was informative, and I refer you to it. But in any case, we haven't solved the problem, obviously. The other day, I'm going to now go to the other day when I was walking around in the neighborhood, and I came upon this thing happening. Let me see if this is going to happen. There. This was the installation of an antenna on top of a pole in our town center. And You don't see here the large box that's about to go in place as well. But and of course, all of these poles that are putting in place are gone. But the antenna is there, and this very large box, about the size of a file cabinet, is attached to the side of this pole in our town center. This is all news to me and news to everybody else. We're concerned now that this is another player when it comes time to underground in the town centers. That how are you going to underground an antenna like this? And that, in fact, we need to look ahead and find alternative locations in an area where we want to underground. Also, the distinction between residential and commercial doesn't work in town centers. Town centers are for mixed use. We're trying to get people to live close to commercial, in fact, on top of commercial in some cases. And so to say that, hey, not in residential areas, isn't to understand that town centers are, in fact, are residential areas, just as the Pearl District, which, by the way, is undergrounded, is a residential area as well as a commercial area. So you've got a special case here. And I'm not sure that we fully address these concerns of town centers and the needs of town centers in this proposal as it is. I think we need to do more than ask people whether they've met with potentially affected neighbors and businesses. We have to really work together in partnership. 50 yards from this antenna that was going in is the county library, where we could have put this antenna, and it would have put some money into the county system, into the library system. There are many commercial property owners who probably would have welcomed having a little extra income and put with this antenna. None of these people were approached. We can help facilitate that in Hillsdale. We're pretty well connected. I can think of at least three or four commercial property owners who would have welcomed to have this antenna here. We were never contacted. And I'm not sure that this may just be a pro forma window dressing meeting where people show up and say, hey, we're planning to do this. What do you think? And, you know, we may object, but we have no power over it. But we really want to work with people. We realize the importance of this technology. We don't want to interfere with it, but we want it to. I commend you, Commissioner Adams, for pointing out the aesthetics and the intrusiveness that this stuff can be. That, yes, we need the technology, but we need to do it right. And I think town centers present a special case.
Thank you. Thanks, folks.
That's all who signed up.
Any questions for the staff?
I do. Mary Beth, or you mentioned that. This is for Mary. Sorry.
Ben.
Thank you. Mary Beth, you mentioned that you didn't have enough resources to hire a category professional that you had considered. And then is the total amount of resources that we get from the cell phone franchises the $150,000 that you mentioned?
Right away.
Yeah, it's for the right-of-way going to the general fund. I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
It's a simple question. I'm trying to clarify that to try to put two things together as part of your testimony at different times during your testimony. One, you said that my feeling that we're outgunned, you mentioned in response that you had contemplated hiring some expertise, an engineer or somebody.
Communications engineer, yes.
Right. But you didn't have the resources. And I asked how much do we get in terms of franchise fees from cell phones, and I asked about, you answered, $3,000 a pole, so about $150,000 for the pole expenses. Are there other franchise fees that we get from our cell phone franchise agreements? Or is it
no, these are this is the sum total of the cell phone franchises.
So we get
franchises.
And how many franchises do we have, more or less, just what we're approving today?
No, there are three others. But one of them was Verizon, but when they were written, they don't expire until 2011. Though when we're done here today or with this issue one way or the other, we'll take whatever the amendments for these other five and go talk to them about amending theirs. There are two others, but they don't have any facilities. They've got the rights to be in the right-of-way, but they don't have any facilities on any poles.
The total compensation that the citizens of Portland get from the cell phone companies for in franchise-related income is $150,000. More or less.
Correct.
Okay, and Do we, Commissioner Leonard talked about materials. I just wanted to, I assume the answer's been a very the same one if we were to ask, if we were to switch out equipment for materials. Do we have the right to regulate the type of equipment? If we knew more about equipment, could we say that it had to meet certain standards that are for quietness, for emission of rays or whatever they are? Do we have the right to make specifications about equipment?
If I understand your question, Commissioner Ben Walters, answering your question, there's a number of aspects to it. We'd have to bring in a structural engineer to review the proposed materials. We would have to have a communications engineer who'd be able to review the proposed antenna equipment and other proposed, like the transformer, to see if there were other possible. We're talking possibly two positions.
Do we have a legal right to say that cell phone companies, let's say, have to use a particular type of transformer equipment that we know because of our study is quieter than is the quietest on the market?
Well, right now we don't have that expertise in hand.
I'm saying just legally. Would we have
I'm
a
not
right?
aware of anybody doing that around the country, but I mean, we could look into that.
Okay. And then my other question is to potentially staff up. And this issue I just want to was raised by Commissioners Fish and Leonard during these re-ups, so I want to give them credit, but are we stuck with getting a total of $150,000 in terms of franchise fees from cell phone companies that is clearly not enough money for us to be good stewards on behalf of the residents of Portland? Could we get more money so that we can be staffed appropriately?
Well, certainly we could talk with the companies. I mean, the franchises are negotiated. And
so this is the federal law doesn't say you only get $3,000.
No.
Oh, I thought there was some sort of state or federal law.
No.
Wow.
It's a negotiated, but it's $3,000 per pole or $3,300 per pole right now.
That's what we negotiated with them. Well, I don't know about my colleagues, but given the impact and given that I think that you are, I really appreciate your willingness to engage us today and to answer our questions. I've learned a lot, and I agree we've got a great team, but I do think that we are undergunned and understaffed. And I would be interested in, I think, the cell phone companies paying a fairer share of what is required to manage the industry effectively in our city. I don't know how to do that, but I'm interested in that.
And I hate to do this, but I have to go to a doctor's appointment, and I realize this is a first reading. And
it's an emergency ordinance.
Oh, it is an emergency.
So can I ask that question?
Well, I was going to make...
Why is this an emergency?
I wasn't going to ask that question. What I was going to do next week, which I will recommend now, is I'm uncomfortable voting on these today. I'd like to have a month. I mean, the staff's done a great job, but there are a lot of questions raised, and I'd like to have a month just to look at this, ask some other questions, do a little more research before I agree to a 3-year contract, and just give me some time to get my arms around it.
I agree.
And I will tell you that when I approached this yesterday, I was a no vote, and I met with Ben, and I met with David, and they answered a lot of the questions that I had. But and I'm getting there, but I need to feel more comfortable than I do right now.
So this is an emergency ordinance because we're up against some deadline in terms of renewing?
These expire.
They expire December 31st, 2008.
So we have at least 2 weeks if we wanted?
Well, if it expires, what's the consequence?
If it expires, none of the wireless facilities have any authority to be in the right-of-way.
But we could do some interim kind of
like 3 month.
Yeah.
An extension?
Yeah.
That's what we did.
We already have extended these before in result of the same questions that were just asked.
But the council could choose, this is a legal question, we could choose to extend them for, again, for 3-4 months or 2 months or whatever.
Is that accurate?
If the sense of the council is at this point that they're not comfortable with the staff proposal, then one interim solution would be to have staff submit extending ordinances for a specified duration.
Well, I want to just be clear. Commissioner Leonard proposed a month. I believe that there's been some substantial progress made in terms of what you've offered, what you've proposed here. But I do think there's some issues raised in this hearing that a number of us would like to have some chance to digest and discuss. So what is an appropriate amount of time?
Well, you tell me. I mean, I threw a month out. If it's 2 months, that's fine, or 3 months, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I really do.
Well, I think if there are some questions, if we need to look into